listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's First Friday, November 1st, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Dorksuk Newsom, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, the Alaska State Museum is opening a new exhibit honoring the ordinary tonight, including a lecture and some special classes that are happening tomorrow. Taku Wind's annual concert from Juneau Community Bands will feature Indigenous composers, including a new composition, Raven and the Box of Daylight. Juneau Audubon's fall lecture series continues later this month with turns and trivia. There's a bug rave tonight at the Alaskan. We'll find out more from the band Magical America. And a large ski sale is happening as we approach the winter season. It's the Juneau Ski Club's annual ski sale. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tak anakaya ha anikak. Gunish cheese.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan-A-D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Young with her song Secrets right here from the Juno Afternoon Red Carpet live in the studio a few months back. You're listening to community-supported KTOO on 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's First Friday around Juno, and at the Alaska State Museum, it's the opening of a new exhibit, Honoring the Ordinary, which creates opportunities for moments of discovery, intrigue, and possibly discomfort by considering the survivance of salmon culture in Alaska today. It's part of the museum's solo artist exhibition series, and it highlights Dena'ina multidisciplinary artist Joel Isaac Thaka. Yes, I'm joined now by Joel and by Jackie Manning, curator of exhibitions at the museum. Gunath Cheesh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. Wasiti, how's it going today?
It's going well.
Yagli, it's going well.
You're about to open in about an hour and a half, right, at 4:30 today. The opening reception happens, and then tonight there's going to be a talk that you're going to be giving, Joel, at 7 p.m. Is that right?
Correct. So 7 p.m. tonight at the museum, we'll do a lecture with some Q&A, being able to kind of show how the exhibit came to be. It's a large installation. It's about a 20 by 30 foot rectangle with, for this show, 5.5 tons of sand for the floor. And thinking about how do you develop something like that? How do you install something like that? So I'll just be kind of walking through the iterations and how you sketch in three-dimensional space for doing installations inside buildings. So the installation is like the size of a house.
Wow.
So building houses inside galleries is one of the things that I end up doing and figuring out how do you bring building materials in through doors and how do you deal with, in this case, the museum has been awesome for bringing in outside materials into the museum. So freezing 5.5 tons of sand and all those kinds of things that go into bringing the beach inside the gallery.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about your history. You're from Kenai. And is that where you grew up? You grew up in Kenai?
Yeah. Kotnu, Shigu, Shikaya, Keilanda. Kenai is where I live. It's where I stay. I grew up in between Soldotna and Kenai. And that's really where the impetus for the show is to have that, what to me was a very ordinary experience growing up in that place that really is extraordinary. For a lot of people don't have that opportunity to be so connected to land, connected to salmon. And that sense of home, I wanted to bring into the gallery space. And the show was first installed in New York at Alfred University. And that was the challenge for me that I imposed on myself was how do I have this sense of where I grew up in Kenai with the volcanoes, with the tidal zones, with the belugas, with the hooligan, with the king, with all the different species of salmon. And that intensity of summer when you're dealing with fish, the smokehouse, those rhythms of life to people who've never been to the ocean before, let alone Alaska, or don't have salmon culture that they've ever seen or experienced.
Yeah, because I was looking at your website and seeing sort of pictures from, I think that probably that installation from a few years ago, and I was like, this is massive. At first I was like, is this at the museum? Like this is, because it was like you used like an outside area it looked like, and there were something like that. It was just really interesting. So I'm really curious about the materials that you work with as an artist. How did you come about, because multidisciplinary can mean so many things. Can you break that down for us in terms of what it means for you?
Yeah, for me, this is an installation piece. So that is assembling and installing the artwork in the gallery kind of in a live community-based way. And so that's one of the things that I like about installation work is that you get that moment of surprise as an artist where until you set it up in the gallery, that's when the artwork is being made. It's all the prep. And so I do maquette modeling. I sample things. I've done quarter scale. I've done full scale, but sections of the show when I was developing it. The disciplinary parts for me, this show has cotton fabric. It's been embroidered. It's been smoked with willow. So it's the museum smells like a smokehouse right now. It has sand. It has live edge spruce. It's been hand embroidery. There's the comment book. The book itself is made out of oak. For the cover, and then the paper is flax paper that I made that uses porcupine quills and beads. So it's like beaded paper, but rather than thread, it's the hydrogen bonding of paper making that hold everything in place. So those are some of the materials that are used in the show. And then the other thing, the show is the size of a house. The first gallery that went into it was 27 and a half feet tall. And then it's a 50-foot long space. The show was like a 20-foot by 30-foot by about 17, 20 feet tall. And putting all those pieces together using lumber from like Home Depot or Lowe's windows out there and framing hardware. So it's very much the industrial. It looks like you're framing a house. And then the rigging, the natural fiber rope is more like ocean vibe to it. But it's a house that doesn't have anything that touches the floor. So it's in that way has the smokehouse feel of being able to see like light come through it. Usually smokehouses aren't completely airtight because you want that exchange of air and smoke and wind to dry and humidity and all of that. So it kind of has that feel to it. But it also has like the dominance of a classical Greek temple. Kind of like the Washington Monument, where you get two colonnades of large columns. This show creates a colonnade with fabric. And so when you walk through it, the columns are moving because they're not anchored to the ground. Everything is suspended from the frames from the ceiling. And you're able to have different zones of experience where when you're on the outside, and that's really what I like. I think it's one of the special things about this show is that the gallery, the way that it's set up, there's more viewing distance from the outside to look at it. And then when you go through one layer of the fabric, you're in a little bit more protected space where there's fabric in front of you, behind of you, and over top. So the light is filtering through. And then when you walk into the center, it's kind of like walking into a daylight through a cloud. And it's quieter because the sound muffles the concrete or the space and then the fabric. You're walking through double layered fabric that dampens sound. So it creates kind of a special intimate space in the center, and then you're also walking on sand inside.
Oh, wow.
And so it's the disciplinary parts. I think for me, for this show, I'm sculpting with light. I'm sculpting with smoke. The way that it's lit, the team did a great job lighting it. The shadows on the walls are larger than the artwork actually is, as part of the other thing that happens, because the light is being shown through the hardware and through the beams and the fabric panels, but then the shadow becomes something that can be like 5 feet tall. So these are 2x4s that on the wall can be 5 foot thick. So you get that like monumental size, but it's sculpted in light and shadow. And so that those are some things I think about doing interdisciplinary or installation. The other thing for this show too is that it's a lot about centering inward and upward and down. So you're looking in, you're looking at the floor, and it draws your eyes up. Mm. So the walls are interesting, but really the focus is to bring people into that center space.
Wow. Jackie, this sounds like it's been an interesting journey for the museum to bring this one to the fore, yes?
Absolutely. It's unlike anything that we've had on display before. And we've been working with Joel for many months. We were preparing all summer long for this exhibit, processing the sand, getting the live edge wood, different points meeting with Joel to get the materials here. And then he came down last week to help with the part of the installation, everything that was going up on the frame. So, yeah, it's been a really, really wonderful experience to get to work with Joel for, I think it's been like 6 months we've been talking on and off.
Yeah, that's so great. And this is going to, it opens today, of course. And how long will it be running?
It'll be up through January 11th, so about 2.5 months. And, if folks aren't able to make it tonight, obviously it'll be up next First Friday, December First Friday. So another opportunity to come in. First Fridays are always free at the museum, but 2.5 months, so you got till mid-January.
Okay. And this is part of the, as I mentioned in the intro, the solo exhibition series.
Yes. So that is every couple of years we open the call, and we have 6 artists that were selected for 2024 through 2026. And Joel very kindly took this first session here, and which is always a hard one to take, but worked out perfectly timing-wise. We're thrilled to be able to have Joel participating and able to do this exhibit. I've been following his work for many years because he's had work at the museum in group shows, Decolonizing Alaska, this last summer, Protection, Adaptation, Resistance. He's been in studying the birch bark canoe. So I've, had a relationship with him for quite a while. But to have this installation here is, I'm very excited about it.
Joel, where do you store the materials when there's not a show happening? Where do you get all these materials from?
Right. So that's always the fun part of being an artist is how do you build houses and then what do you do with the house when you're done? So the helpful thing is this is kind of like a tent. So you can the whole thing rolls up. Mm. So all of the fabric rolled up is about the size of a 55-gallon trash can. So it's been – I can roll it up tight. It's been in an actual bag, and it's been – sitting in a crawl space, and then when I moved into my house, it's been sitting in the corner of a bathroom where I know that it's protected from everything else, and that's where the fabric has been. So my upstairs bathroom at my house smells like smoked willow all the time, which is great. And then all the hardware fits in like the size of a priority mailbox. The rope fits in a 5-gallon bucket. And then the wood, that's one of the other things that's helpful is the lumber I just procure from a hardware store for whichever locations it's at. Mm-hmm. And then the trickier part is getting the live-edged wood. And that was one of the things like Southeast, obviously, there's logging history and still people who are harvesting trees and milling. And so that was one of the things for these logs came via boat, where when I was in New York, it was getting them like hauled out of the woods with a tractor and then... the spruce from here is much lighter than the beech and the cherry. So the having a 15-foot, 3.5-inch thick, 20-inch wide hunk of beech and cherry wood is much heavier. So these materials here feel more like home in that way because mm-hmm. the spruce is home for me too, up in my neck of the woods. And so that's part of the thing that's just unique each time, to where it's really about the feeling, and it's not sand from one location or a tree. It has to be the same tree every time. It's thinking, what's ordinary to this place that really is those extraordinary things? And obviously Southeast with trees is one of those things that just is magnificent. So I take that as an opportunity to have little touches that make things personal to the place each time an installation goes up. And that's one of the opportunities that was from this time, is that it's spruce, that is really nice live edge looking spruce.
Wow. So in addition to tonight, which is going to be, we're talking about the reception is opening this afternoon. Tonight at 7 o'clock, you'll be doing a lecture about the exhibit. And then tomorrow there's some special classes. One I know you said is full, but then there's another one. But tell us about both of them, and then what the opportunity folks have to join in tomorrow.
Yes, sorry. So the one that still has space in it is Salmon Skitten Processing Hands-On Demo for All Ages. And that will be tomorrow, Saturday, from 2 till 3. And Joel will demonstrate how to turn dried salmon skin into leather. And participants can try out the different techniques and see various types of artwork that can be made out of salmon skin. Unfortunately, the other workshop is already full, and that one he is showing them how salmon skin can be turned into different types of leather for making artwork.
Yeah,
but 2 to 3 cool. tomorrow, there's still space.
2 to 3 tomorrow, and how do people register for that? Do they have to register?
You know, if you can call the museum, or you can sign up for the activity on lamb.alaska.gov/youthart, and that is on our website as well. But let me say that one more time, lamb.alaska.gov/youthart.
Yeah, because and LAM is L-A-M because
L-A-M.
It's Library, Archives, and Museum,
yes.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Boston, yes.
Yeah, no, because yeah. I always, and wherever I see the website, I'm like, is that an I or is that an L? And I'm like, yeah. Well, it's library, so it's got to be an L, right?
Yes.
So that's how I try to remember it. But that's a great place to find out all the information about the exhibits that are coming up. LAM.alaska.gov is the Library, Archives, and Museum website. And if you do the /youthart, you can find out information about these classes that are happening tomorrow, the salmon skin processing demonstration at 2 o'clock. And then, Joel, your website, joelisaac.com, is that the best place for people to follow you? Or do you have an Instagram? Or how do people look for you?
I do have an Instagram, and it's L-I-K-A-Y-E-S. The Instagram doesn't allow for the orthography for my name, so I can't do the barred L for Lekayis.
Yeah.
And I don't think it allows the glottals either, so that's my Instagram.
Come on, Instagram, get
right?
with it.
I mean, yeah, if the federal government and Instagram could figure out how to use indigenous languages on their keyboards, that'd be great. We have computers. Let's do it. But then I also have Facebook, which is just Joel Isaac, and those are the two social medias that I do. My website, I need to get better at posting on. I've been a little bit busy with my day job since I graduated from Alfred, and that's where I updated my website a little bit after that, and then I got sucked into doing large commission sculptures, and I just switched over to social media more than my website. But
yeah, absolutely. And let me just spell your last name, or Isaac is I-S-A-A-K, just for people who want to spell that out if they're looking for you on the social medias. And as you said, the spelling for the Instagram, one more time, give that to us.
L-I-Q-A-Y-E-S.
There you go. Yeah, so people have that and they can find you there. It's awesome. It's Honoring the Ordinary. It opens tonight at the museum in just a little bit, actually. So thank you so much for coming in and telling us a little bit about it. Is there anything that we need to know about what's coming up in the museum next?
Renan Caro, a quilter from Fairbanks. Her show's opening in December, and she is a renowned quilter. So if you love quilting and if you love art in general, that's going to be a stunning show in December.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Shaggy. Thank you so much, Joel. What do you say in the museum, in the art world business for, like, in theater you say, like, break a leg, and dance you say, you know, merd or whatever it is. What do you say in museum speak?
You know, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I've heard a lot of break your leg, good yeah. luck, have fun.
Have fun, yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're ready. We are ready. So that, I can tell you
on.
That.
It's a lot of the show must go on.
All right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, goodness, cheese for being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janine.
Okay, up next, the upcoming Taku Winds concert from the Juno Community Bands. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kahinak John Martin. And the word this week is keet.
Keet.
That means killer whale. And here's a sentence.
Hasani hasaya keet kwan.
Our paternal uncles are killer whale people. Let's hear it again.
Keet.
Killer whale. Gunesh Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahinak John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kaguantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Little Ed Littlefield there with the hook song. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Juno Community Band's Taku Winds Ensemble is presenting Eagles, Ravens, and Wolves. Wolf, a concert on Saturday, November 9th at Thunder Mountain. For more, visit junocommunityband.org. And joining me now are Sarah McNair Grove and W. Todd Hunt. Gwyneth Chish, hi, AID. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Was Iti, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so this concert is called Eagles, Ravens, and Wolf, and it's focusing on indigenous composers, and that's kind of awesome. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how this came about.
Yeah, well, we had been talking about this kind of thing for at least a year, probably more. And there, on a previous concert, I think I tried to put together some sort of indigenous, like, you know, part of the program. And then we thought, well, why not just do a whole program? And, you know, we'll do it in, like, next November. And so here we are.
Here we are. That's awesome.
So it's been more than a year in the works.
I was playing a little bit of Ed Littlefield, and he's going to be playing with you.
He is, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it really worked out well, because normally we just use people who live in town, but right now Ed's living in town because he's at a residency at one of the schools, and so he happens to be here for our entire rehearsal process and
awesome.
The concert.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he will be playing a big old timpani solo, which is, right? Like, it's not the kind of instrument you think of. When
yeah.
You think, oh, yeah, let's go listen to, you know, somebody play this nice solo on five timpani. It's going to be really, really cool. And another neat thing, too, is I couldn't find the music for this piece because I had a specific piece in mind by a composer named Jared Tate, who's Chickasaw. And I ended up just kind of cold emailing him and saying, like, hey, you know where I can get this? And he was super great and just sent me the music and, like, best wishes and everything.
Oh,
so,
that's
yeah.
nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And then you're also doing a new piece.
Right, by our very own Artemio Sandoval.
Okay, so, and Artemio is in the Juno Community Band. He's in the Taku Winds Ensemble.
Right, he plays bassoon.
Okay.
Yeah. He's got kind of an inside track. It's
okay.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So has he been composing music and brought this forward to you, Sarah, or was it something that you asked about?
He has composed pieces for us in the past. Actually, I think he's composed two pieces for us. It's been 5 or 6 years since we've played him, but yes, he has. So this is a great way to kind of get him doing that. His pieces are really lovely.
Yeah.
And this piece that he wrote is called Raven in the Box of Daylight. And there are some wonderful sound effects. I mean, if you listen to the trumpets and the trombones, you're going to hear ravens squawking. It is
really
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It is really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
How do you get that sound?
Oh, we can't give away trade secrets. Then everybody do it.
That's going to be, we got to show up on November 9th.
Of course, ravens make so many noises.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We could probably make a sound and they would just make the sound.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
And is there other pieces also in the program?
Yes. Yeah. So, and actually this is kind of interesting because it didn't occur to me until, you know, relatively recently that we've got indigenous music from all over North America. So not just Alaska, but the continental United States, Canada, as well as Mexico.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So we got three pieces by Bob Barker, who's a Squamish First Nation musician. And he has these three pieces that were orchestrated or bandistrated by Robert Buckley, Raven the Trickster, Wolf Song, and The Gathering of Eagles, all of which were the tunes were all carried down by the oral tradition and given to the composer to create these band pieces.
Wow.
Which are, really colorful and fun. There's a Brent Michael Davids, who's a Mohican composer. He wrote this piece called Grandmother Song, which is really kind of interesting. It's sort of soothing and almost like a feel good kind of thing. But the really interesting thing is the band sings.
Oh.
Like basically the whole time.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it's kind of taking turns. Some people play and other people sing, and then they kind of swap around some.
Oh, is that a new thing, or is that something you've all done before? Or the musicians I don't want to sing.
It happens occasionally. I think maybe we played one piece.
I don't think I've led one.
You haven't. I think it was with Dwayne. It was the Cheerio March or something.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I mean, it's not.
What a fun challenge.
Yeah, it is. And it's it's fun.
It is a fun challenge, yeah.
That's going to be cool. So remind us, Sarah, when this concert is.
It is Saturday, November 9th, not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. And it is 7 o'clock at the Thunder Mountain Middle School Auditorium.
And this is the Taku Winds always does like a fall concert, right? And is there you have another one with Taku Winds in the spring, right?
We'll have another one in the spring, yes,
okay.
And that will be March 1st. So we'll come back in the spring and talk about it.
And anything else we should be looking forward to from the Juno Community Bands coming up?
Our reindeer band is going to start up again, and we play Christmas carols around, and we'll probably be around a gallery walk someplace.
Right.
So you can listen for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's going to be so great. This is really fun. I know you're honoring Indigenous composers during Alaska Native Heritage Month, which is fantastic. I love that there's a new piece involved,
mm-hmm.
that there's pieces from all around, well, not just our country, but
right.
other countries
mm-hmm.
that you're including in this. And then, of course, Ed Littlefield. A lot of folks know Ed Littlefield in this town.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful percussionist, mm-hmm. and I love that he's going to be playing timpani for you. I think that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's next Saturday night, November 9th at Thunder Mountain. For more information, you can go to Juno Community Band, not singular, even though it's Juno Community Bands. I always have to point this out.
I know, it is confusing.
But it's junocommunityband.org, and that's where you can get tickets and more information about this concert. Sarah, Todd, thank you so much.
Yep.
It's always a pleasure to have you come in and fill us in on what's going on. We look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Kenneth Cheesh.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, Turns and Trivia with the Juno Audubon Society. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Bird Note. These rubber ducky sounds come from a flock of American widgeons, trim brown ducks with pale blue bills and big white wing patches. Widgeons are grazers, rather than filtering food through serrated bills like other dabbling ducks. Their bill is narrow, with a pointed tip like that of a goose. When feeding on water plants, a widgeon grabs a leaf and rips it off with its strong bill, rather than using the straining apparatus typical of dabbling ducks. Widgeons' great fondness for grass brings flocks of them to graze on lawns adjacent to city lakes. The birds become tamer through the winter, and you can get close enough to see how they cut blades of grass like feathered lawnmowers. A special treat for experienced birdwatchers is to spot a Eurasian widgeon grazing alongside the others. Look carefully through the whole flock for a duck with a reddish head and gray body, and you just might find one. But experienced or not, you can learn more about widgeons, both American and Eurasian, on our website, birdnote.org. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Juno Audubon's fall lecture series continues on Thursday, November 14th. So it's a couple weeks from now. It's at 6:30 p.m. And this month's topic is turns and trivia. I'm joined now by Brenda Wright and Juno Audubon intern Owen Squires, who coincidentally will be giving the talk this month. So Gunath Chi, Shat Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasi Iti, how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Of course. Hi, Brenda.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, always. I love it. I love having the Juno Audubon come in. So the fall lecture series continues, Brenda. It's also usually when you have your monthly meeting at the same time. Mm-hmm. Just want to go over those details. You can go to junoaudubon.org, and you can learn how to become a member of Audubon. It's really easy. And you can get an idea of on the events tab of all the different things that are coming up that you do, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. And it's a wonderful new website you have. It's been up there for a while now. It's a really easy to navigate, and the fall lecture series continues through to spring.
Yes, it does. April is our last regular meeting, but that's when we also start our spring bird walks.
Right. Then when it gets warmer, we start walking outside, which is kind of nice. Okay. And I didn't even know that you had interns at the Juno Audubon Society. So Owen, what does an intern for Juno Audubon do?
Yeah. Well, the internships are usually seasonal. They start early in the spring. I started in April. And really what we're doing is checking out a couple nesting sites. So there are tern nesting sites out at Mendenhall Visitor Center that I frequented.
For the uninitiated, what is a tern?
Ah, yes. A tern is a type of seabird. You know, for the untrained eye, they kind of look like a seagull, but a little more slender and a little more elegant when they're flying around.
Oh, they're more elegant. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's T-E-R-N, right?
T-E-R-N, okay. T-U-R-N.
Okay, right. And so you have been setting up sites to study these?
Well, I've been partnered with another member of the Audubon Audubon Society, Gwen, who works a lot with the tern colony that resides over at Mendenhall.
I see. Yeah. And what are you discovering? I know you're probably going to be talking about, this is what your talk's going to be about, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so give us a little preview of, like, what have you been discovering?
Well, it's mostly monitoring the colony, checking for changes in population dynamics and success rate, stuff like that. See how many chicks were born, how many hatched, how many survived, how many return. All those kind of things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And how do you collect the data?
Well, I went out there quite a few times personally to go look, observe, count how many birds were out, how many terns. And we also had a camera out there that would take photos of them throughout the day, regardless.
Oh, you have like an automatic camera
that's
out there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of
Do you
sweet.
Monitor it from afar, or do you have to go and look at it when you're out there?
There actually is a little hidden cubby in the visitor center of the Mendenhall Visitor Center, and you can kind of sneak in there, and it has all the camera information and everything.
Oh,
like that.
That's so cool.
Yeah, don't actually have to go out and disturb the tern colony to check them out with that camera, which is pretty darn cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, and the trivia part of what you're going to be doing, what are we doing with the trivia part?
Well, it's going to be a lot of trivia, more than just tern trivia. I was hoping to give some general info about birds that people might not know. I'm kind of aiming for harder questions, you know, not really simple ones like, identify the robin, the eagle, the tern, stuff like that.
Well, wait, for some people, yeah, like somebody on this side of the desk, that would be hard.
Well, we will have a couple of those sprinkled
okay,
in
good.
There for
Make
sure.
Some, give yeah, a couple. Yeah, you gotta lay, yeah. gotta give me a layup once in a while.
Yeah, of course. But I was hoping to bring in a couple trivia questions that are a little more complex and maybe some things that people might not know.
So do you have any top of mind you might be able to tease us with? Like, what is a trivia question that we can start thinking about now? A good hard one.
Yeah, a good hard one.
Yeah.
Well, I just put one in there recently about some common birds in Juneau. There was a rufous hummingbird, the Arctic terns, tree swallows, and wrens, Pacific wrens. And I asked, of these birds, which are common in Juneau, which one is listed as near threatened on the, what's it called, the IUCN conservation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one like we'll that. Have to look up.
Yeah.
That's kind
yeah.
of cool. I love yeah. that. Don't give away the answer. Let people do that. They have to do their homework so they can be prepared when they show up. And Owen, where are you from?
I'm from here. I was born and raised here in Juneau.
Oh, yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. And so how did you get into birds and such?
Yeah. Well, my mom was a big birder. She loved birding and all that stuff. And when she met my dad, who is not a very big birder, she got him a bird book. And he didn't really use it that much. So... it was lying around the house when I was a kid, and I picked it up when I was around six and started flipping through it and trying to ID the birds that would come to the bird feeder.
Oh, that's those, so cool.
Yeah, those were usually pine siskins and chestnut-backed chickadees.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really great. Brenda, so you have interns.
Yes, we actually... have convinced our Audubon board that it's important to do help with a little bit of research on different things. So we're still looking at rufous hummingbirds and tree swallows and Arctic terns.
And is there a way people can get information if they want to become an intern?
Yes, we would love to have some people apply. We will have it on our webpage by February and up at the university then too.
Okay, that's cool. I love that. That'll be on the website then that people can apply for.
It's not a massive amount of hours, but it's really good field work. I think you'd agree with that.
Yeah,
yeah. And, yeah, you get to
you
get
don't
out
have to
there,
get up at 3 a.m. or anything like that. So.
Right. And Brenda, last question. What were we hearing bird note. We were talking about ducks in there. What are we looking for in Juneau right now in terms of birds?
Well, I know the hunters are happy about this, but almost all of our birds that live with us all winter are back.
Oh, wow.
But they are trying to hide out in places where the most hunters can't get to them as easily.
Oh.
So there's a couple really hot spots right now, like Twin Lakes and Kingfisher Pond. And so if you feel like trying to see the ducks that will be with us all winter up close, that's a good place to go.
Awesome. That's so great. Well, it is the Juneau Audubon's Fall Lecture Series. Owen Squires here is going to be doing the presentation on November 14th at 6:30 p.m. And where will that be at?
That's the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS.
Yes, Egan Lecture Hall at UAS. And it will also be the monthly membership meeting. And you'll be learning about terns. And also, it sounds like Owen's got some good questions in his pocket to, like, challenge everybody. Yeah. So,
and it's free. Please let everybody
it's free.
Come.
Yeah, and it's free. And, of course, you can find out more information and all the things that are going on at JunoAudubon.org. Thank you so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it. Gunnath Cheesh.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, up next, there's a bug rave happening tonight at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel. What? What is that? We'll find out more next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO.
Car, I'm a red rag and ball. Put on leather gloves. Put on leather gloves. I got a fast car. I'm a red rag and ball. Kiss, kiss, feel the love. Kiss, kiss, feel the love. We'll be right back.
right there is Magical America with Sunshine City Girl. You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Aukbay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. And Magical America is right here with me now. So say hello to Heather Mountcastle and Luke Weld, members of the band. Gunnar the Chiefs for being here. Let's just get right to it. What's this bug rave all about that's happening tonight?
Yeah, so the bug rave, doors open at 7:45 at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar. And we've been planning this event for a while. It's kind of to just showcase the how Magical America is doing right now, different band members and new songs. So the bug rave, the theme is bugs and neon. So,
perfect timing. We're still in that Halloween atmosphere, right?
Exactly, yeah. So we encourage people to dress up as their favorite bugs or just wear some antennae, you know, and you'll expect the Alaskan to look a bit different. We have black lights just everywhere, so expect neon, bug, everything.
Neon, bug, everything. Yeah. Now, Magical America, tell me about the band.
Yeah, so, hi, Boston.
Hi.
So, yeah, when I first started this band, I was kind of thinking Juno has a lot of bands in different genres, and it doesn't have any post-punk bands, so one of my goals was to create a band in this genre, post-punk, kind of like Joy Division or The Cure or, you know, bands from the late 70s or early 80s. And that's kind of what this band is, and so we've kind of been, you know, for the last year or two, introducing this band to people in Juno so they can see what this kind of music is like. And I think, you know, this bug rave idea is maybe a pretty fun way for people to get introduced to those sounds if they're not familiar with them.
Absolutely. Now, who's all in the band?
So we've got Jeffrey Trout on guitar, David Shakely tonight on drums. I sing in the band, and I also manage it. And then my sister, Abby Mountcastle, also sings. And Luke created it all and just kind of inspires us and is on the drum bus and the keys. And it's just a big old jam up there.
I love it. I love the sound. It's like you're saying, Luke, they're, you know, finding space for certain kinds of bands in Juno that maybe we don't have. And to be able to bring that forward is kind of cool because you've all been involved in other bands, right? People have played with other people and people go and do. I mean, there's so many cross collaborations happening, right?
Yeah, I call this band camp, you know, so everybody plays in everybody else's band at some point or another.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I need a drummer. I need a guitar. I need somebody to sing. I need, you know, yeah, bass player. And then it happens, right?
Yeah,
definitely. That's really kind of cool. And so what can we expect tonight in terms of the concert?
Okay, so doors open at 7:45. It's a $25 entry. And at 8 o'clock, Zachy Two Hats is going to be featured opening up for us. And it's going to be really fun. He does improv synth music. And we're also incorporating into his set burlesque dancing from Gams Divine and Ruby Reckless. So that's going to be fun and go on for a little bit. And we're going to have Magical America around 9:30. And one thing that I'm really enjoying about this event is how many people are collaborating on it. Meanwhile, while all this is going on, we're going to have Amanda from Juno Party Animals. She's going to have a photo booth right at the front. We've got artist Natalie with a body painting booth in kind of the main area. Twirly Whirly Cotton Candy is going to be giving out free hot cotton candy. He's
what?
The cotton candy wizard.
Free cotton candy.
Yeah. We're just like, yeah, sugar up. So it's going to be fun. We've got a lot of really cool folks involved. So then we're going to have a costume contest and a bug parade within the Alaskan just to showcase what people have been working on, because I know a few people who have been working on their costumes for a while. And after all of that fun, Magical America is going to come back and play for a little while. And to wrap it up, we got DJ Dr. Ake coming in with some beats until the bar closes. So it's kind of like just a long, fun, buggy night.
I love that.
A full night of entertainment.
No bites.
Yeah. And when you said, last question, you were talking about the person who was going to start first. And you said, did you say sense music?
Synth music.
Synth? Synth.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you said sense. And I was like, what is synth? I was like, is that something new I haven't heard of before? I got excited. But synth, you're talking about synthesizer.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's. I guess Luke probably knows a little bit more.
He's got a bunch of synthesizers, and it kind of looks like a spaceship.
Looks like a spaceship, and you're going to take a trip.
Yeah, he stands behind it.
With Zachy Two Hats.
There's a lot of bleeps and bloops, and it's pretty abstract and cool.
Yeah, I hear he's going to have some pretty cool visuals going on. We're looking at, I think, an experience here.
And how does I know usually in terms of these kinds of concerts and stuff, lighting is a big factor. How is that working tonight?
We've just kind of thrown everything we've got at it. I mean, I've never ordered so many black lights in my life. Yeah. No, we're jumping on the counters and replacing light bulbs and all that. It's going to make the Alaskan look different than it has, at least.
Yeah, because I think when you think of like Alaskan, you think of sort of, you know, I don't know, down home, like kind of, you know, chunky folk music or a little bit of rock, you know, that kind of thing. But having this kind of music there, a little bit of rave music and sort of turning it around in there a little bit, it's going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's a great layout for it. And thanks to the Alaskan Hotel and Bar for having us. They've been really great. And we're going to pop over there just a few minutes to make some final setup things. So we hope to see you all at 7:45.
That's cool. Well, and how do we follow? I know Magical America is on some of the streaming services and stuff. Do you guys have an Instagram, or where do we follow you for future concert updates?
Yeah, we've got Instagram, Magical America, and Facebook. I'd say like the Instagram is probably the most poppin' one. And if you have any questions, we've got an email, magicalamericaband@gmail.com. But you can also contact us through Insta and stay updated there.
I love it. We'll kick off your November tonight at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel with Magical America and their awesome collaborators, because there's so many. It sounds like it's going to be a really wonderful experience. So Gunnith Cheech for coming in today and telling us a little bit about it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Boston.
Of course.
Thank you, Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, up next, winter is coming, and so is the annual ski sale from the Juno Ski Club. We'll get all the details next right here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Juno Ski Club trains young skiers and works to create a lifelong love of the sport. And of course, equipment is a big part of skiing, and each year the group holds a large ski sale. It's coming Saturday, November 9th, that's next Saturday, at Centennial Hall. That's how big it is, that it has to be at Centennial Hall. And here to share more is Virginia and Brock from the Juno Ski Club and the Juno Ski Patrol, right? And this is a fundraiser for both of those groups.
Exactly.
Awesome. So tell me about the ski club and the ski patrol a little bit, Brock, please.
Well, I am a coach with the Juno Ski Club. I've been a coach with the program since 2009. And our mission is to help engage young skiers, you know, starting at age 7, going all the way up into 18. And even beyond, we offered, we have had some adults involved in our program. But the idea is to involve athletes in an experiential education where we're using exploring the mountain. We're using competition as a way to help develop their interest in skiing, develop a lifelong passion for the sport, as well as develop themselves.
What age do people start at?
Well, our program starts at age 7, and we go up from there. But the Juno at the Eagle Crest Ski School starts much earlier than that, and we're separate from the ski school. Typically, over at ski school, they'll start students as young as 3. For our program, it has to be a little bit older, and they have to have a certain degree of competency.
I see. Okay. And Virginia, when people want to join the ski club, where do they find out information at? What's the website?
Website I have is, Brock, do you have it off the top?
Yeah, it's just JunoSkiClub.com.
JunoSkiClub, yeah. Easy. Juno Ski Club. Everything in Juno starts with Juno, which I love, right? It's easy. JunoSkiClub.com. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can find out more information and get your kids signed up. And what age can people be part of the ski club until? Is there any age limit?
Well, there's a limit as far as like doing racing in Alaska. Most kids are going to age out at 18 when they hit adulthood.
Gotcha.
But we have definitely encouraged older athletes to come and train with us. We've had parents that were interested because there are programs nationally. There's a program called NASTAR where athletes, adults can go and race and receive points and then go to national, races and things like that. So we'll certainly allow, people who are interested can always participate and train with us.
And reach out and do that. So, and as I was saying, Virginia, equipment is a huge part of this because when you're a skier, you have to have boots and skis and poles and all the things that you need. So tell us a little bit about the ski sale.
Ski sale, basically, as you say, is for equipment of all types and clothing and all the other accoutrements that go along with skiing. They focus on, because I can use myself as an example as a supporter of the program. When your child that you just bought all this new wonderful gear for last year doesn't fit.
Of course, they grow out of it.
They do grow out of it. So the gear is in excellent condition. You don't want it in your closet. You take it. And somebody else has the great pleasure of being able to take that same gear and follow that same path through. So it's sharing and giving back. And then the next time you can turn on, also we get benefit by turning around and looking, there's next year's equipment that we would be able to fit into.
Ah, I see. So I didn't even think about that obviously if you're starting young, you grow out of it. Your shoe size changes, obviously, so you're going to need different boots. And then the skis also probably change as you grow, right?
Almost every year sometimes.
Yeah, okay. So that's kind of interesting. And so do people have to you don't have to sign up. You just show up, right? There's a little bit of an admission fee to get in.
Yes, and if you want to bring the other part in terms of the gear, we start accepting gear on Thursday the 7th. You can bring your gear from 5 to 8, and that's again at Centennial Hall. And we have folks who will help assess the gear, determine which part it should go to. We also asked that they will make the decision if the gear is just too old or is not in a good condition, they will not accept it, so that you would be assured that whoever is coming to look at gear is going to be getting something that is safe.
Yeah, so if you're going to the event to buy gear, you're getting something that's been sort of looked over.
Correct.
And it's not broken or anything
that's
like that.
Correct.
I think that's really smart.
That takes place Thursday, November 7th from 5 to 8, Friday from 4:30 to 8:30, and then Saturday morning from 7:30 to 9:30.
Oh, wow. Okay, so there's a couple days where you can bring your equipment by. And you can find that information on the website, I'm assuming, in terms of JunoSkiClub.com?
Yes, and there is our poster. You'll see it around town, and it's also on the site that you can, on the Juno Ski Club site, you can see and have that information.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's so cool. And then on Saturday, the actual day of the sale, that takes place from 10 to 1 and costs $5 to get in. Children 12 and under are free.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So you can. And oh, wait a minute. I see a note here. There's a door prize. Tell us about that.
Well, the door prize is from Eagle Crest, and that's a season pass.
That's a pretty big deal right there.
That's a big deal. And they've offered that year in and year out as part of our relationship, between the club and Eagle Crest. One thing I do want to mention is that for folks who are interested in kind of speeding up the process of bringing their gear in, They can get some of the paperwork they need in advance by going on our Facebook webpage and you'll see the information there where you can download the paperwork you need, where you put what kind of gear it is and information like that. So definitely check out the Juno Ski Club Facebook page to help if you want to speed the process up.
Yeah. Well, that's so great. Well, it's the Juno Ski Club's annual ski sale. It's happening. The ski sale itself is happening on Saturday, November 9th from 10 to 1 at Centennial Hall. But if you have equipment that you need to bring in, that starts on Thursday, November 7th, and you stop by at the Centennial Hall, and you'll be able to drop that equipment off as well as on the 8th, right?
Correct.
So, yeah. So, and even the morning of.
Yes.
So that's something good. And you don't have to be a member of the ski club to bring that equipment. And if you have equipment that you want to sell or pass on, this is a great event to do that with. And again, for more information, visit the Facebook page, Juno Ski Club Facebook page, or go to junoskiclub.com for that.
I'd like to note, too, it's not just the gear. It's the jackets, the pants, the gloves.
Everything.
Everything.
Anything you have
related to skiing.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And not just alpine. Also, there's Nordic gear, so cross-country gear you can find. I've seen kayaking gear, hiking gear, ice climbing gear. If it's outdoor gear and it's in great shape and you want to save yourself a little bit of hassle trying to sell it on Facebook Marketplace or whatnot, this is a great opportunity to help that and support the Juno Ski Club as well as the Juno Ski Patrol.
Awesome. Virginia Brock, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from DJ Thompson. Have a great weekend.